All right, I think it's about time we had an AA meeting and got some of these great folks that have volunteered to come here and talk a little bit about sobriety and the great gifts of sobriety. Our picnic is what we refer to as a celebration of sobriety. It's where we get together and just celebrate the fact that we're alive and we are sober. And as my sponsor used to say, some days that's as good as it gets some days. I'm alive and I'm sober. But with that also comes a lot of great gifts, and we're going to have some folks here with some many years of sobriety to share about that. I think we'll probably start out with Maggie O. Just met Maggie. Maggie has 20 years of sobriety, and she'll be the first one to lead off her panel.
Thanks. Oh, it's not that special. I'm Maggie, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm so excited to be an old-timer. I cannot tell you. And I don't even mind being, in fact, it's kind of nice to be the baby, you know, for a change. This is so great. Thank you so much for welcoming me. I am so blessed. When I first got sober, I wanted, you know how they say, if you want what we have, I wanted Delia's complexion and Delia's hair. Yeah, I couldn't think any farther than that. I've worked on the complexion, and I'm still working on the hair. But the gifts come slowly sometimes. And I was in danger. I thought I was not going to be acceptable because I wasn't a bad enough drunk. I didn't have an exciting enough story. And this one old boy told me, he said, you know, Olson said, you're so boring, and your story is so bad. He said, here in AA, plagiarism is encouraged. We want you to copy people that have some time. So he said, you may die sober, but you might just die boring. So pick out somebody who has an interesting thing to tell and just copy that. And so I thought that was good advice. And so I chose Louise, who was pulled naked out of the magnolia tree by the Fulton County Fire Department. And I added that to my story for a while until I was able to make some kind of sense. The truth is that all of us share the same story as alcoholics, and it doesn't matter whether I shot the place up or went to jail or wrecked cars. What matters is that the agony of my alcoholism is it matches. And so the joys of my sobriety are probably going to, you know, pretty much match the same way. And maybe you can get something from that. It's like Dorothy being swept up in the tornado. Things are really pretty awful when you're drinking so much and you can't stop. And then you get dumped down in Oz, and it's not all Munchkins and Lollipop League. I met my alter ego, the other parts of my sick personalities, the scarecrow who had no brain, I had drank my brain up, and the lion who had no courage, I was filled with fear, it's the only emotion that was left, and the tin man whose heart was broken. And we all set out for Oz, all parts of me. And is it any wonder that tripping across a field of poppies, one would fall dead fast asleep? You know, you get to Oz when you walk in the doors of AA, and it seems that someone with one day is Oz, the powerful wizard, you know, and you think, oh, this person has so much. And then Toto pulls back the curtain, and the wizard is revealed as a carny man, just like the rest of us. There's no such thing as senior lieutenants, is there? And because of helping each other, you know, these are things I have to do myself, but I have you to help me. And in that regard, I found out that I did have a brain. In sobriety, I was able to get my brain back. My broken heart is mended. And although I was able to persevere, because, you know, to drink that much scotch takes a lot of perseverance, but it doesn't take 1 ounce of courage. In sobriety, every day you have courage. And just like the cowardly lion, I found mine. And just like Dorothy, I found that since all I wanted was just to go home, with your help I could. So I find myself back in Kansas, and it's kind of ho-hum day to day, but I'm sober today, and anything is possible, now that I at least have all my parts back together. And being the kind of gal who loves a thumb reference, you know, I don't like to go walking around the steps willy-nilly wondering where I am. It's just wonderful that there is a book. We have the Cliff Notes, The Gifts of Sobriety. In this book is really great. It matches up your promises with your steps. For those of you who've never read it, and a friend of mine who thought I might be having trouble in that area gave it to me. You know how when you get a gift, it sometimes hits you right through the heart like an arrow? Well, this one did, and I've made reference to it more than once in my recovery, because I like to know where I'm going with these things, you know? And over here in the promises, it lists them in the order of 12, the ones that we just read tonight. Now, the first day that I got sober, I started having some freedom. You know, anything could happen once I didn't take a drink. And even today, if I look down and I say, you know, doggone it, I just wish I could find some serenity in life, and I hit this, oh, wait, step three. Have I done step three lately? Look over here. Have I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to God? Because if I do, then I have a chance at serenity, and I can know peace. And if I'm wondering, just for example, if I'm wondering why in this world I can't find some kind of way to intuitively know what is baffling me, uh-oh, step 10, inventory time every night. So this has been a wonderful reference for me, and I have to say that the gifts of sobriety have been what's kept me sober, and you. Everybody has something in sobriety that's their big thing. You know, with someone, it's their parents. With other people, it's just can't hold a job. You know, I mean, everybody's got one thing, one burr under their saddle. And for me, it's interpersonal relations. It assures me in that 12 and 12, in I think it's step 8, that if I make progress in my spiritual program, there's nothing that I can't accomplish in the realm of interpersonal relations. And so I have to say that's probably my biggest gift, because I found you, and you like me, and you invite me to come and share that little bit with you tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Those are some great analogies there. That was excellent. And the next one we'll invite up is going to be Avery. Avery has 21 years of sobriety. And if you don't know Avery, I don't know where you've been. She's somebody you just see everywhere. If you're around in AA in Atlanta, I'm going to be doing some service work with Avery, and look forward to working with her. And here we have Avery.
Thank you, Doug. I'd like to thank the Zone for inviting me to participate in the Old Timers panel. It was so funny when I first came in, I was thinking, I bet I'm the baby of this group. And that's what I was thinking. And finally I voiced it. And I said, I'm the baby of this group, aren't I? And they said, no, there's somebody on the panel with 20 years. And I said, ooh, yay, yippee, you know, because right away I was thinking, well, that means I don't have to go first. And then I walk in the door and I meet some of the other older old-timers. And when I shared that with them, they said, oh, well, they're probably going alphabetical order. So I'm just glad to be here sober. And I want to share something with you that my sponsor shared with me. And he's an old timer, and he really helped me with some things when I was just about to celebrate 16 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, right away, it was my 16th birthday. I celebrated in January. And I was so excited about this 16 years. And of course, the first thing I thought is that it was all about me. So I decided I wasn't going to my birthday at my home group. Instead, I was going to go and listen to some live jazz. You know, I'm going to treat myself for my birthday. I like jazz. And a friend of mine was moving to Washington, and they were having live jazz and a going away party. So I made up my mind I wasn't going to my home group. Well, my husband, who's about 2 years more sober than I am, he told me, "You mean you're not going to your birthday at the home group?" And I said, "No, I want to listen to some jazz. You know, it's my birthday." And he said, "Yeah, but your birthday isn't about you. Your birthday isn't for you." I said, "Well, I should be able to do what I want to do to celebrate my birthday." And at that moment, my sponsor, one of my sponsors from Chicago, called. And I talked to him, and I shared this with him, just knowing that he was going to be on my side about this thing. I said, "I decided I don't want to go to my birthday tonight. I want to go listen to some live jazz." And I shared with him what my husband said about my birthday not being about me, and I should go to the home group. And he said, "Well, Avery, let me share something with you." And he was, you know, he was about 20 years sober then. And he said, "Avery, when I first came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I couldn't see it. I just tried to see it, but I couldn't see it. The harder I tried, I just couldn't see it. And finally, I was able to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And as I got farther down in the tunnel, I started to see that it was the old-timers who was holding up the light for me to see it. And as I got to the end of the tunnel, it was my time to hold up the light." And he just gave me a powerful message to let me know that it wasn't all about me. And those are the gifts that the old-timers have given me. They have given me things like that, to let me know just what I should be doing, because sometimes I don't always know. And he's right. It was the old-timers who was holding up the light at the end of the tunnel for me to see it. And when I get to the end of the tunnel, it's my turn to hold up the light. And the old-timers have given me so many gifts. And since this is a zone picnic, I want to put these gifts in the order of, you know, the triangle: recovery, unity, and service. And these are the gifts that the old-timers have given me, because I didn't know anything about these things when I came in. I didn't know how important they would be for me. But when I found out about, you know, unity, I didn't understand unity and how important it was. But when I look at the traditions, I realize now, I used to think the traditions didn't apply to me. If it was a tradition meeting, I would leave. Because I thought, wow, I want to be able to share. Well, what I found out is, yes, the traditions are important for me. That's one of the gifts of sobriety. And the unity is about the traditions. Tradition number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Who is that about? It's about me. Without unity, then I wouldn't be here. So what I found out from the traditions is everything that keep AA together, keep me together. And tradition number one says it all. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And every other tradition under that support that tradition. And that's how it's supported. You know, and every tradition under there is to support that first tradition. And that's about me. You know, that's one of the gifts that sobriety have given me. The other gift was service. Service is so important to me, because without service, see, I wouldn't be here. I learned when I was 6 months sober, one of the old timers took me into the jail. I was carrying the message into the penitentiary. I didn't even know that I was doing service, but I didn't know how important it was for me. And so I still do service, and it was through service that I found out something real important about service, and it sums it up. I went to carry a meeting to a guy last week who's in the convalescent home, and he do a lot of service, and he wanted a meeting brought to him. Well, my first thought was, I don't have time. I have to get my hair cut. So that was okay, because that was my first thought. But my second thought was, I'll be there. And I pulled up in front of the convalescent home, and it was the most powerful meeting. And somebody shared something that he had shared with them once. And it was about the hooks, that it's the way people go fishing, and you get all these hooks in the water, and all these hooks are in the water. Whereas the busy fish are so busy, they don't have time to pay attention to the hooks. And the hooks are resentment, anger, self-pity, dishonesty, self-seeking. So the busy fish, they're busy, so they don't have time to pay attention to the hooks. But it's the fish that's not busy that the hooks get their attention, and they're drawn to the hooks, and they're captured, and they struggle. So today, I don't have to pay attention to the hooks. That's why he shared, he see me all over the place. See, I'm too busy to pay attention to the hooks, and that's a good thing, and that's one of the gifts that sobriety have given me. I don't have to pay attention to the hooks today. Another thing, and I say that last, but it's really first, is recovery. And recovery is the most important thing, because that's why the triangle is made where recovery is at the base. Because with everything else rests on recovery. Without recovery, I don't have anything. So recovery is another gift that sobriety have given me. And I can kind of break that down in three areas. I found out that I couldn't have recovery unless I had to give up something first. And in the first few steps, I have to give up my drinking. That was hard for me to give up. I found out it didn't matter what I knew. I had to do what I knew. And so therefore, I had to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, not verbally, but deep down inside, where it counts. Because when I admit it to my innermost being, I'm not just saying I'm an alcoholic and I'm still drinking, which I did for 3 years. When I admit it to my innermost being, I'm able to do what I knew, you know. And so that makes a difference, you know. It's an inside job with recovery. Everything's an inside job. And in order for me to get something, I have to give up something. The next thing I have to give up, first I gave up my drinking, then I have to give up my thinking. And that I do that in step three. When I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. My will is my life, and my life is my thinking, and I'm getting confused. Wait a minute. When I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him, my will is my thoughts, and my life is my actions. And when God give it back to me, he give it back to me renewed, where I'm able to think different, so I'm able to act different. And the last thing I have to give up, and I think I just found that out in my later years of sobriety, because I thought God had it all. I thought he had all of me. But the last thing, it reminds me of a joke that Richard Pryor used to tell. He had gone through a lot of divorces, and he used to share that when one of his ex-wives went to court, she told the judge, "I want everything he's got. If he have any dreams, I want them too." And that's the last thing I have to give up, my dreams, my hopes, my desires. I have to give God my desires, because before I give him my desires, he don't have all of me. And once I give him my desires, then when I go to him in the 11th step, I don't want anything. So I'm able to pray for only knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. So those are the gifts that was given to me. And I share with newcomers, a lot of times I get to speak to them, and I say, if you do 5 things, you don't have to worry about drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. The first thing is to get a sponsor. The second thing is to get a home group. The third thing is to pray. The fourth thing is to work the steps. And you can't work the steps without a sponsor. And the fifth thing is to be profoundly grateful. And a lot of times they think that's the easiest thing. But see, it's a trick to being profoundly grateful. It's more than just making a gratitude list. It's another inside job. When you're profoundly grateful, it's the kind of gratitude that goes so deep down inside, it comes back up and it reaches out. And those are the gifts I've been given. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. That's a fine job. The next person I'm going to ask to come up is John T., and John T. has 27 years of sobriety. John?
My name's John, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you all for inviting me to be here. Thank you, Amy, for inviting me to be here. And I'm a member of the 11 a.m. Bridge Builders group at NABA and also the Spiritual Principles 8 p.m. Wednesday night group at Biscayne. And nice to be among alcoholics who I have seen there and who also are on this side of town. And I could and probably should make this real short because one of the gifts that I'm still seeking and I haven't fully received yet is the gift of brevity. But having said that, I asked my good friend Fred, who came here with me today. We were having lunch, and I said, Fred, tell me what you think about the gifts of sobriety. What are the gifts of sobriety to you? He looked at me, and he said, today. I said, is that it? He said, that's it. And the truth is, that is it. It's today. It's a wonderful life that we have together, and we have as we practice these principles in all our affairs, out in our families, our jobs, our other pursuits in life. But we only get it one day at a time. And without AA, I can tell you, this alcoholic would have never had it. A couple of weeks ago, I had a special experience for myself. When I first came in, I had a really wonderful, several wonderful sponsors, and one of those fellows passed away a couple of years ago with 51 years of sobriety. And I can remember when I first came in and was in awe of all these people that had years and double digits and 20-something. I was in a meeting one day, and he shared, and he said, I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my 10,000th day of sobriety. And I want to thank you, AA, that a couple of weeks ago, I celebrated 10,000 days of sobriety. And I wouldn't have figured that out if it hadn't been for Big Steve from way back in those years in the past, but you know, that's 10,000 gifts that I would have never had without this place. At the end of my drinking, everything was about what I didn't have. And more important than that, it was about me dwelling and obsessing about all the things I didn't have and trying to assess blame and all the other places that blame can be assessed for the things that I think I don't have. And a dear friend of mine, whom I hadn't seen for a number of years, who had been a former drinking buddy of mine, came to visit me. I hadn't seen him for a long time, and I was ecstatic that he would come see me. Not very many people still wanted to come to see me in those days. And he came and sat down, and he didn't look like he used to look, and he didn't act like he used to act, and he didn't sound like he used to sound. And he pulled a green plastic chip out of his pocket, and he said, John, I just wanted to come by and let you know that 9 months ago, I joined AA. My life just went from bad to worse to worse to worse, and you know a lot about what happened to me. And I'm just grateful to be able to say that I went to AA and I found something better, and I wanted to share that with you. That's all he said. I'm sitting there dumbfounded listening to this because I was just like this guy. Well, it took me about 4 more months, and interestingly enough, all of the yets that I didn't have yet, I got in the subsequent 4 months when I was struggling as best I could not to come to an acceptance that what he said about himself was true for me too. I had had the gift of denial up to that point, and then I lost it. That particular gift will kill me, and it will kill you too. So I came to AA. And after I'd gotten involved with the steps and my sponsor and was on this pink cloud and new fellowship, new friends, it was a wonderful start for me. My sponsor said to me, and I'm sure yours has said to you in times past, says, John, remember, you might be the only copy of the big book that someone else ever sees. My friend was that for me. And what I saw when I saw it was with him was the living big book. You know, we talk about going to living history around here. He was a living big book. And the message was planted, and when it was time, I knew where to go. I once 12-stepped a fellow and took him to a bunch of meetings, and after about 3 weeks, he looked at me and he said, could we please stop doing this? And, oh boy, my ego was shattered. 3 years later, I saw him at a meeting across town leading it. He came up to me after the meeting and he said, John, thank you so much. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. Well, I was glad to be God's agent and your agent and trying to share the message with him, but it was because of the power of God through this program and the gift that I'd received that I tried to share with him in an imperfect way that he was there. That's why I'm here and that's why we're all here. Like our founder Bill said, we pass it on. That's what, after we receive the gift, that's what we do with the gift in order to keep the gift. That same sponsor told me something else not too long after he told me that first thing about me being a copy of the big book. He made a statement that I thought I understood, but I understand it differently now. He said, John, if you ever want to hide something from an alcoholic, be sure to put it in the big book. Now, being a person who was really trying and doing well, but mostly pink clouding it and fellowshipping it and not doing too much reading, I thought what he meant was that most of us took that book and put it on the shelf and we never opened it up and that we didn't see what was in it. And that's true. That was true for me for a long time, and maybe there have been a few days in your sobriety when you didn't get a chance to read the book either. More recently, I've come to understand something a lot more special and deep about what that meant. I was at a meeting at NABA earlier, it was this past Friday, and we're fortunate that we have a bunch of old-timers in there, and one of the guys, who's pretty well known around town, has 47 years of sobriety, and during his sharing, he was talking about that thing that happens to all of us, at least it certainly happened to me and it happened to him, where we're reading in the literature and all of a sudden there's something there that wasn't there before. They put a new sentence or a new paragraph in the big book. And he was talking about something that he'd recently read. Now, this guy's been sober and active in this program 47 years. And he was excitedly sharing with us this new sentence that he discovered. These pearls are hidden for us in our program, in our relationships, in our fellowship, and especially in the big book and the 12 and 12. And we don't know when we're going to get one of them. It took this guy 47 years to get that one, and I'm getting mine every now and then too. And the gifts never end. We always get something new. There's always more if we will do this. Kim and Maggie both talked about the promises. When I was thinking about, okay, John, what are you going to say the gifts of sobriety are to you? And there's so many, but I picked three. The expulsion of the obsession to drink, which is the reason I came here in the first place. The spiritual awakening and the way of life. Now, if the gifts are going to be described, how are they described? My personal favorite is the promises. And Kim and Maggie were talking about the night step promises. And so I was thinking about them. They've already been read. But I just went through them, and instead of taking the whole phrases, I just pulled some words out. Now, here's some of the things that the old gifts, the old ideas that we got removed. And these are all out of the night step promises. Regret, uselessness, self-pity, self-seeking, fear. Our program takes all them away. Now, here's some words that we're given that come to us in the promises. Freedom, happiness. Back up a little bit. One of my personal favorites. Amazement, serenity, peace, intuition, comprehension, fulfillment. Who could want more? I've come to believe over a long, long period of time that the real and true gifts of this program are the spiritual gifts that we get, because there really isn't anything else. The rest of these things in life that we need and we want and we seek, they are added to us as we do this stuff. We do this stuff first, and those other things are added to us. But what we get in addition is we get the deep inner sense of fulfillment. And as it says in the 12 and 12, we become happily and usefully whole. There's a true gift, and there's a spiritual awakening. My favorite promise, which is also the gift of this program, is the last one in the night step promises. And that promise is, they will always materialize if we work for them. That tells me that what we have here is not maybe, it's guaranteed. I've used the word guarantee occasionally in an AA meeting because I say, you know, this stuff is guaranteed if we work for it. Sometimes that word doesn't go over well with some folks, and sometimes it does. But it does say that rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I'm told, and it's in the literature, that Bill said, well, they said, well, what would you change, Bill, if you could? And he said, well, there's one word in there that I would think I might change, and that's the word rarely. I'd change that and put the word never. They will always materialize if we work for them. And the other thing that was changed in the big book, one of these pearls that's put in there, is that they said, you know, there is such a thing, and most of us have it, as a spiritual experience of the educational variety. Now, I've had a long, long, long education. And if you want to talk sometime about the way to not do things, I know a lot about that. This program will carry us along, though, if we stay with it. And we get room to make all kind of mistakes and have all kind of backsliding and have all kind of questions and everything. But that's okay, because we are participating in a spiritual experience of the educational variety. If you haven't had a chance to read Appendix 2 lately, give it a try tonight. And there's the gift. There is the pearl that is hidden in the big book, hidden in this program, and hidden in the sober lives of all of our friends and fellows that we share this program with, where gradually we come to see the gifts that we are being given. And I, for one, am grateful for that, and I thank you again for inviting me to be here.
Thanks, John. I've picked up a new term there, pink clouding and fellowshipping. That's it. Our next speaker will be Robert Kay, who has 28 years of sobriety.
Thank you. My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic. I want to hasten to add that I don't have 28 years yet. It's about three more weeks. Okay? And my friend Dick Bassett used to count his days, and he had a method to doing that, and I also realized when I passed 10,000 days, and it's shortly after 27 years. And Dick passed away about 3 weeks ago. Dick was the DCM of my zone, which is 13G. And I will miss him. I will miss him very much. He was my service sponsor. Even though I have more time than him, he certainly did a lot more service than I did. And we all could learn from the examples that Dick set for all of us. I got confused, I guess. Thank you for asking me, Amy. I thought we were going to talk about the gifts. I brought them. This is a money bag, by the way, from the Federal Reserve Bank. I keep very precious things in here. First thing I have here is a little booklet called Alcoholics Anonymous, An Interpretation of Our 12 Steps. That's from the Adelan Society, which used to be the Atlanta Area Intergroup before they changed their name. This was given to me by Joe Phelan. If you know Joe Phelan, raise your hand. Joe Phelan got sober in 1949. I was 3 months old. When I was 17 years old, my mother used to leave AA literature on my dresser. And I gave it to my brother. And one day around the dinner table, my mother, Joe had a daughter who was the same age as me who went to St. Pius the 10th Catholic High School, and I went to Marist, and my mother said, you know, you ought to go talk to Maureen Phelan's daughter about your drinking. And I thought, what do I want to talk to some old fart about my drinking for? I didn't say that. I said, sure, I will. But I wanted nothing to do with some old fart about my drinking. And Joe came to be one of my dearest friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. And spiritually, I was never as close to my father as I was to Joe Phelan. And Joe Phelan became my spiritual father. I was a pallbearer at his funeral. And I missed Joe desperately. You were talking about the lights that people held up. Joe was one of those people. This is a little set of AA pamphlets. Faith, fear, honesty, humility, and love. And this says, happy first to Robert. Hope you do enjoy this as much as I have. Love, Maggie H. How many of y'all know Maggie? Okay. Maggie gave this to me on my first birthday. Maggie died recently with 38 years of sobriety. She was an inspiration to all of us. For her last couple of years, I think the only meeting that she went to regularly was the Sunday morning 10 a.m. meeting at the Biscayne Room, which Tom attends regularly and which I've just started attending regularly for the last few years. Maggie gave this to me on my first birthday, and the funny thing about it is it just sits up on my dresser, and I just happen to run across it when I need it and when I'm in times of crisis. And if you can't find something in faith, fear, honesty, humility, or love that'll help you in a time of crisis, then I don't know what program you're in. Last but not least, this is a pen. This is it's a fountain pen. It says Harley Davidson on it. It was given to me by my sponsor, Gary Shelby. How many of y'all know Gary? Yeah. Gary passed away about 2 months ago with 37 years of sobriety. He was my sponsor for 25 of those years. Shortly after he died, I was telling some people that, you know, boy, I sure am glad that this didn't happen to me when I was new in the program or I'd be drinking. And they said, Robert, this couldn't happen to you when you were new in the program because you were incapable of forming that kind of relationship with anybody. And that's true. I was incapable of loving anybody when I came in the program the way that I loved my sponsor. And I didn't find out until after he died the reason why he gave me this pen. He always wore a shirt with a pocket, and he always carried a pen. And he always carried a bunch of 3x5 index cards around with him. And when he learned something about you, at some point, when you weren't looking, he would write it down. And if you happened to say, today is my birthday, on this day next year, he would call you and say, happy birthday. And everybody would wonder, how did he know? And that's because he always carried a pen, and he always carried those 3x5 cards. And then he'd take them home, he'd put them on his computer, and he kept track of that stuff. He was the most thoughtful person I have ever known in my life. And one of the commitments I've made in my sobriety is to try to carry on just a little bit of that into my life in his memory. And these friends, and I want to include Dick Bassett, are the gifts of my sobriety. Thank you.
You mentioned it, Dick, and especially Joe Phelan. I didn't personally know him, but I know my sponsors know him, and everybody that sponsors them know him. So indirectly, I've been able to get a lot of his wisdom. Yeah, appreciate you mentioning that. Okay, the next person on our panel is going to be Tom F. with 30 years. Thanks, Tom.
My name is Tom Flavin, a grateful alcoholic tonight. But today, this afternoon, whatever it is. And my birthday is October the 7th, 1972. It's a funny story that I know it was in October, you know, but I got a hold of a sponsor when I came down here. It was suggested, and in open New York, you don't. Anyway, the groups I belong to up there, they didn't say, October I got sober. Yeah, okay, June I got sober. It wasn't a date. And my sponsor asked me. He says, "Well, when in October?" I said, "How the hell should I know?" I said, "Beginning of October. Well, you know, what's the big deal?" He says, "It's a big deal down here." So I says, "Okay." So we figured it out. We sat down, and I told him I had started in the program in January of 69, and then I finally put it down in October, and he says, "What day?" I had to go back through all that stuff and remembering, but it was okay. And we finally got down to the October the 7th. So, and he says, "Remember that. Whenever you get up to speak in front of people, you tell them your sobriety day." I said, "Okay, fine." And by the way, somebody told me a long time ago. He says that I asked him. I said, "What the hell am I always nervous when I get up in front of a bunch of people and start talking?" He said, "Well, that's the good Lord only. That's the good Lord shaking the horse shit out of you, so you only tell the truth." And, you know, I believe it's true because, you know, right now I'm shaking. And, you know, I was sitting there when I was listening to it. Well, thanks, Amy, for asking me to be here. It's an honor and a privilege to be at a function like this. So, Mike, thank you for having this thing. And I was listening to the other panelists get up, and I'm saying, you know, hey, you got all these profound words of wisdom, and I don't really have too many profound words of wisdom today. The greatest gift in the world I got in sobriety was first, I came here and I finally put the drink down and then I started learning about what people, you know, how you people smile, what made you smile all the time and laugh and then I would suggest that I get into the steps I always had a problem, you know. Make a long story short. I had a problem with God, one of this guy I know back in Brooklyn, he turned around. He says, "You got a problem with the third step." Second step. I said, "No, I got a problem with the third step." He says, "No, you got a problem with the second step." I said, "Okay, I got a problem with the second step." And we started going through the second step, and he says, "What's sanity?" I says, "What's sanity? Sanity? I don't know. What's sanity?" He says, "Well, sanity to him was the ability to get up in the morning to a dry bed, to know exactly how much money you got in your pocket." See, back in them days, you didn't need, in Brooklyn, you didn't need a car, you know. You drove, thank God, because I wouldn't be here today if I had a car back in Brooklyn. And he says, "You have a choice to eat, you know." And I'm thinking, you know, hey, that's right. You know, the first thing I did in the morning was run to the where I had the booze hit and take a couple of whacks of that so I could straighten out. And I never ate. This was strictly, I was a run-of-the-mill drunk where I just needed to be level all day long because I needed the money to function, to pay for my booze. And that started my road to recovery. And, you know, the greatest gift I can think of in the world to me today is my higher power, which I choose to call God, because if I didn't have my higher power, which I choose to call God, I wouldn't be here today, you know. And I wouldn't be here. And then the good, just to go down the list a little, I don't know. It's just it's an ongoing thing. I still have the same higher power I had when I first come around here, when I up in New York, I got a little complacent once I got into the steps, and I thought, I was about 13, 14 years sober, and I had a little something bothering me, you know, and I said to myself, I got 13, 14 years, I don't know, whatever it was, I said, if I say something about this, they're going to think, you know, I thought maybe, you know, when I had 13, 14 years of sobriety, you knew everything, and you were a guru, and you didn't talk about stuff like that, you know. And I happened to say something to this guy about it, and he says, "What's wrong with that?" I said, "Well, he says, nothing wrong with that. It's all you got to do is share with the meetings." I said, "What? And let them other people know I had a problem like that?" And that was another awakening I had, you know, in my sobriety, you know. I don't know, the early 90s, the things in my neighborhood were going bad, and we were thinking about contemplating a move, and My sister had been living down here for about 20 years at that time. And my mother came down here after my father passed away, and we come down to visit him in 91. And this looked like a nice place in 91, you know. A lot of trees, fresh air, nobody crazy running around the streets trying to kill you, and they do today, but back then it didn't. And it was nice. It was a change of life, and three of my guests, my two sons and my daughter, because I had them in sobriety. It was about 5 years when I started a family, and they were in that age, so I make a long story, another long story short is I moved down here, and I get 20 years sobriety, you think, you're God's gift to the world, That's what I thought, this is the ego I had, and I got down here, and my higher power was with me, and he put me back down on my knees again, and he let me start all over again, and it was funny. I hadn't thought of this, the first person, not the first person, but one of the first most influential persons in my sobriety today was Maddie. And that little skinny little runt used to curse me out. And that was good for me. She put me on the right track. And, I found that Sunday morning meeting and I fell in love with it. And I used to go to the Thursday night meeting too. But the Sunday morning meeting, I used to go to that when I was first sober. I went in St. John's over in Queens Boulevard. I went to a Sunday morning meeting, and it made a lot of sense to me. So I started going to the Sunday morning meeting, and I met my sponsor, and he told me to get another sponsor, and I thought he was crazy, but I got two sponsors, and I met Maggie, and I met a few other people, and those people held me together for a long time, maybe the first couple of years. And, I looking back at it now, my spirituality was nothing compared to the spirituality I found down here. And I thought all you people were crazy, What the hell are they doing reading the steps? What are they doing reading all the sort of stuff, the traditions and the promises? And it was the best thing that ever happened to me, And I had to sit there and I had to listen. And after a while, I started liking to, hearing the steps like you people do, and the traditions and the promises. I can honestly say that besides my higher power, which I chose to go back as the greatest gift I ever had, ever received from this program, and in my life, he was always in my life. Was my friend Maggie Harrison, and she was a gift to me because she kept me straight and narrow. She used to call me an Irish son of a bitch, and I like you, but I don't love you. She used to say, I love you, you Yankee bastard, but I don't like you. That was in the beginning. Excuse my French if none of you had ever heard that before. That's the way she is, that's the way I am, and, some things never change. And then she used to, say, I love you, and I was pretty close to Maggie in her passing days, and it was nice. I can't say enough about Maggie. This is supposed to be nice things, so I better get off this morbid shit, But anyway, I just want to. And Dick Bassett was a great. He was a he was a great person too. I remember Dick coming to the meetings all the time and bringing us the pamphlets from the Zone, And the only thing I can say, my greatest gift, like I said before, and nothing else counts if I don't have that. Thanks a lot for letting me share.
Thanks, Tom. I think when the next person will have come up, you had a special request not to be at the beginning and not to be at the end, but we're going to put her almost in the middle. Evelyn, would you please come on up? Evelyn belongs to the Vonnie's group. She's a home group member, and we see her every Tuesday night. And we recently lost a member there, and Evelyn kind of came in, filled his place. So, but Evelyn has 34 years of sobriety, and we love her dearly, and we really thank her for that.
Everybody, my name is Evelyn Logan, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I feel about as out of place up here as a jackass at the Kentucky Derby. But anyhow, I was asked to do it, and one thing I was always told was to never say no. But I don't like to do this because I never wanted to be on the speaker's circuit. I wanted to do my A work in a more quiet manner. I don't like this being up here in front of all you people, some of whom I've known for a number of years, these gentlemen over here and Cindy over here, and I've known every for a short time. But anyhow, I need to brief you on how I came to be in the Vinings group, which I want to call St. Dunstan's. It involves a little miracle because God works mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. And I lived in Hiawassee, or Hayesville, North Carolina, and in Buckhead for 13 years. I came back and forth, and all my activity mainly was in the Sandy Springs and in Buckhead. But Fred Hubble, who was a member of the Vinings group, lived at the Camelstone where I lived, and he would bring me to meetings. And then when his car was stolen, Ken and Ken brought him and me to meetings. Well, after I moved here, April 16th, I called Fred, and he said he was very sick, and he didn't think he'd be able to take me to meetings anymore, but he wished me luck. And it wasn't too long after that that Fred died. And in the meantime, I had a call from a young man, Ken W., and Fred had put him in touch with me. I'd never met Ken, but he arranged for me to have rides because I don't drive at night anymore. I don't see well enough to drive at night. So that's how I came to be a member of the Vinings group, and I appreciate them, and they even allowed me to celebrate my 34th birthday here the end of July. Now, this is my original AA book, which I bought on March 7th, 1967, which would mean I should have 3 more years sobriety. But like a lot of people, I goofed up at the first, and then I goofed up after my first birthday. And so my date is July 31st, 1969. So many people touched on the promises, and I'm going to say something which is going to offend a lot of people, but that's the way I am. I say it like it is. And my home group knows what I'm going to say. I don't particularly care for the promises. They're okay in their place. But when I came around, they didn't have promises. But then somebody evidently picked them out and gave them numbers and typed up the sheet. And now we all do it and we say that thing that everybody says and I don't say, whatever it is. And but I wanted you to know, one of the things that I got out of this AA program, one of the blessings was my husband, Bob Logan, and some of you guys know him. And he died 20 years ago, but he went out into this book and picked out 5 more promises on the bottom of page 84 and top of 85. And I'm going to read them to you, if I may, and if I can see them. Number 1, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned, we hope. 2, we will seldom be interested in liquor, If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. Number three, we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. Four, we are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. And the last one, and you all are familiar with this one, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. Thy will, not mine, be done. Well, anyhow, that's my opinion of the promises. You can do what you want with it, and I still like to hear them read, and I will tell you that most of them have come true for me. But a lot of you don't know that these promises appear in the big book after the ninth step. That means you should have been working all along up to that point and not even considering that you were going to get all these good things at once, because you're not. This comes the hard way. You don't get it on a silver platter. You work for it, and that means work through the steps with your sponsor, preferably 1 through 9, and then now we're ready for the next step, which is the promises step. So that's my message on the steps, or on the promises. I had a couple other little things I wanted to tell you, if I can find them. Oh, they're in the front of the book, where they should be. A young lady sitting there in the front asked me out on the porch if I had any advice for her, and I said, come to the meeting and listen to what everybody that has been around a while has to say, and maybe you will hear some things you need to hear. But some of the things that are good to do, if you're new, are to get involved. Getting involved is the most important part of this program, and being of service to others. And by getting involved, I mean to be really true to your home group. Have a home group, first of all. But circulate and go to many meetings. I've been to every meeting in this city, I presume, at one time or the other. And in all out west and all up in the mountains, and I go to every meeting I hear about that I now I can't get to as many meetings, so I have to be satisfied with the little grains of wisdom that I get. Take some offices. Be the GSR when you get ready to do that. Be the DCM. Be the secretary of the group. Be the secretary of the inner group. Be on the answering service for the inner group. That's one of the best services you can do, and it's rewarding because people come into town, and I was on it on Monday nights from 5 to 7. People come in town and call, and they refer them to whoever's on, and then you instruct them where to go to a meeting, and that's a reward. I missed that. Let me I can do that again now that I'm back. Oh, I'm back in Atlanta now after I've been back for 5 months. And I've had a lot of things happen to me during my years of sobriety, bad things. More bad things have happened to me since I've been sober than ever happened before I came into the program. And I suppose the hardest one of them all, and this is a hard one because it was moving from my beloved home in the mountains back to Atlanta. I did not want to come because I love the mountains, the peace and the tranquility, and I had a little serenity and a little peace of mind. But that's, you know, you accept the things you cannot change. I still have the place, but it has to have some repairs now, so I'm struggling through that. What else do I want you to do? Oh, go to some of the big stuff. You know, after you've gone to the little stuff like this, go to a state convention, go to roundups. Atlanta has a roundup every July, and it's a good one. We had a travel trailer, and we belonged to a group called the Coffee Cup Campers. And we met all over the state of Georgia once a month, and we had a meeting and a fire and a meeting around the fire, and it was wonderful. So things like that are available. Let's see. Whenever you hear of a retreat, go to it. The first one we went to was in Florida, and I've been to 2 since then at the St. Ignatius House on Riverside Drive, and those are always just what you need. You can go back to your little room and do your inventory, and it's a sense of peace that you don't find a lot of other places. One of the blessings I received from this program was the ability to stand up here in front of you and do this, because I didn't think I could. When I first came in, I couldn't even read how it works without, you know, like passing it on to somebody else. And I didn't know how to laugh. I learned to laugh, real laugh, within the last 2 years, because I met a young man up in the mountains. I've been sick with my knee replacement for 2 years, and this young man was in the program. He was a Delta Airlines pilot, and he carried me around to meetings everywhere, and that's a blessing. You never know when you're going to have somebody put in your life that is going to be a real blessing, and I've had two more since then. The lay minister up at the, I was in an assisted living facility before I came down here also, and there was a young man who did the preaching on Sunday, and he came for a Bible study on Wednesday night, and he was a blessing. And then I got down here, and they had a spirituality program, which is what I've been hunting for all my life, real spirituality. And he was the chaplain at Camelstone, just left 2 weeks ago, and it's the biggest, one of the biggest losses outside of my two husbands and the rest of my family that I think I've suffered, because I was getting somewhere with my spirituality. And we have a replacement, but I'm prejudiced. If I like a person, I don't like replacing somewhere with my spirituality. And we have a replacement, but I'm prejudiced. If I like a person, I don't like replacements, and I probably will not act as nice as I should toward this young man. Anyhow, I probably won't go to his meetings, in other words. Well, I did say that I met my husband, Bob Logan. I met him over, let's see. He chaired a meeting one Sunday morning at the Triangle Club before I even knew him. But he chaired it for me, I'd heard afterwards. And then the following week at Biscayne, Bob, I met Maggie. Not that Maggie, but Maggie, what's her name?
Harrison.
Oh, okay, whatever her name is. I don't like initials, I like names. Anyhow, she introduced me to my husband, Bob Logan, and I met him in 70, we married in 73, and we had 11 years, and now he's been dead almost 20 years. So it's been quite a journey through sobriety, but every bit of it has been worth it. I love the AA program. I love the people I meet, and I like to meet people all over, and I like to have friends all over in other states, overseas. I corresponded with a man in London and a lady in Hawaii through the Loners International program, and that's another thing you can get into. They'll send you names from New York that you can write to these people and carry on a conversation. And I'm talking too long. I'm sure my time's up. Why didn't the bell ring? Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. Thanks for being here.